Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
It's Wednesday, January 8th, 2014, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, joined by Missouri School of Journalism colleagues Mike McKean and Ernest Perry. It's good to be back with you guys after a few weeks away for the holidays, and you better believe we have a lot to talk about. Dennis Rodman. Today, he sang a soulful happy birthday to North Korea's Kim Jong-un before a basketball exhibition. Rodman's recent trips to the Hermit Kingdom have gotten a lot of media coverage. We'll talk about why. Drone journalism. Our program here at MU has been grounded by the FAA, but last week, a newspaper in Washington State published video shot using an unmanned aircraft. And where's the line when it comes to holding our politicians accountable? A former CBS journalist appears to have outed a conservative Illinois congressman on Facebook this weekend, claiming it was his responsibility, the journalists, to call out a congressman's hypocrisy. Was it? I'll ask our panelists. There's a whole lot more that hopefully we'll get to as well, but I want to start with the polar vortex. It's hard to believe we're looking at temperatures right now that are 30, even 40 degrees warmer than they were just 72 hours ago, but hey, we'll take it. The deep freeze closed schools, halted trash pickup, pretty much put life at a standstill. What did we see with the TV coverage here in the mid-Missouri area?
I actually thought the local stations did, as they typically do in a weather emergency, a very good job. I mean, they brought all their technology to bear, all their personnel to bear. I could have done without, either at the local or the network level, all of the poor reporters standing out there in the freezing rain with holding up frozen T-shirts or creating snow or whatever. But, you know, I thought they did a good service, as they typically do.
Well, that's the point. I never quite understand why there's this need to stand out in very dangerous conditions to tell the story. I think the public knows it's dangerous. They can look out their window. They know they can't go out, so why should anybody else be out? But I think it's the visuals that television is looking for. But I think locally, I think the stations did a pretty good job.
Now, let's talk about that for a minute, because I was actually supposed to come back to the mid-Missouri area on Sunday. I couldn't. I was supposed to fly back in and was stuck in Chicago for the last couple of days. And a lot of what we saw up there were some of the things that you might come to find or to think of as pretty routine, reminding people about the signs of frostbite, making sure and reminding people to check on the elderly, to fill their gas tanks. As a journalist, do we need to keep doing that, or does there come a point where people tune that out because they know it? That's so routine that we're wasting their time by telling them that.
I think it's hard to make that decision. Yes, a lot of people know that. Maybe some of them do tune out. But I think if we got into a situation where somebody, you know, some harm came to someone and we weren't doing that, we weren't providing that kind of routine information, we'd probably feel sorry about it. And, you know, you've got to fill the time. When the weather is the big story, it pushes everything aside and you've got minutes or hours to fill. And so you're going to fill it with something. Do you want to constantly have it be people standing out on, you know, the snowy corner saying, look how frozen my T-shirt is? No, you want them to give you something of value.
Yeah, I think it does provide some value. One of the other things that I think television could definitely do, if they have the resources, mm-hmm. is to give people a sense as to what's happening with the grocery stores, what grocery stores have supplies, what grocery stores don't, especially when you're talking about supplies in terms of ice melt and that sort of thing, because people are really looking for those things. And if the media could provide more information like that, it would be great. And also road closures and that sort of thing, which I think they do a pretty good job of. I think if they did more of that, that would help fill time in a lot of places.
And I think, Ernest, we are beginning to see more of that from some stations, but taking advantage of the social media platforms to do that. I noticed Channel 17 here in Columbia, for example, KMIZ, was constantly making references to the audience helping with their weather coverage. Not only when they were in the news coverage, but during promos they were running about weather coverage. We're in this with you. Help us. Give us information that we can pass along to our audience. So that's good.
One of the things we started seeing, too, with this storm especially, and one of the things that we saw with this storm, especially building on what Ernest was saying a minute ago, in Chicago at least, and in some of the national coverage, that we've started seeing reporters who are reporting from the inside of cars, traveling on highways, using different types of live shot technology that's cell phone based as opposed to microwave truck based we would see in the past, or satellite, that lets you go out on the roads, see what the highways look like, what the byways were doing, and if traffic was moving and if they were plowed. Let me ask you this. One of the things we talked about, especially during tornado season, was the proliferation of storm chasers and that live video of seeing it as it was going on. Ernest, you had mentioned to the people going out and making snow, throwing boiling water up. It looks like a whole lot of fun, these science experiments people are doing, but a lot of people got hurt too. Are we actually putting people in danger when they monkey see, monkey do?
I think there's a possibility of doing that, but I think a lot of it goes back to what Mike was talking about in filling time. And I think that that's what these gimmicks, what I call gimmicks, actually do. What I'd like to see is more actual coverage of what streets are open, what streets are available. And I think that locally we saw a lot of that this time around. Yeah. And we didn't see in previous storms, because I think the way in which the city is actually clearing streets is different this year as opposed to last year. And we're having to do, the media is having to do more and more explaining of what the city means by cleared streets as opposed to it's passable. And there's a lot of re-explanation going on by the media and city officials.
Or when the snow routes go into effect.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried at the national level, especially when I see the Weather Channel naming winter storms, right, with Storm Ion, and I forget what the one was before that.
This one was called Hercules.
Hercules.
I was like, where'd you come up with that one?
Gee, I wonder if it was
the
a cross promotion
department?
For the movie, right?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
But, you know, I do think that there is a tendency, you know, with the storm chasers or people going out and gathering, you know, user-generated content of one kind or another, that just by ratcheting up the sort of the conflict or the sensationalism around these storms, it could lead somebody to do something that they otherwise wouldn't. And I worry a little about
that. It seems as if they're trying to create a narrative or create a story around these storms, and that's not providing news and information for the public. That's creating drama, and I have a real problem with that.
So speaking of drama, this morning my alarm clock went off, and the first thing I heard was the sound of a man singing Happy Birthday. Frankly, it was worse than nails on a chalkboard. It was Dennis Rodman serenading his beloved friend, his words, North Korean President Kim Jong-un, before the exhibition basketball game in Pyongyang today. Rodman's trips to the Hermit Kingdom have gotten a lot of publicity. Yesterday, he appeared on CNN's New Day, and things got kind of tense when anchor Chris Cuomo asked Rodman if he planned to ask the North Korean leaders about jailed American Kenneth Bae. What happened?
Well, basically, Chris Cuomo was doing his job. He's saying, we've had this American who's been held there. We don't know what the charges are. He's been there for about a year. He's in poor health. Are you going to bring this up when you meet with your friend? And Rodman just went off. I mean, he literally went off accusing Kenneth Bae of some wrongdoing when nobody else has suggested that he's done anything wrong. And he basically got into a really contentious argument with Chris Cuomo about, why are you questioning us? All these players are sacrificing their time away from their family. And, oh, poor us. We're over here probably being paid pretty good money. We're getting all kinds of free media publicity. And you're going to go off on us because we ask you a legitimate question? Good for Chris Cuomo. I think the pushback that's occurred as a result of what Rodman did is well-deserved.
And I think the players that went over there, for whatever reason they went, I think a lot of it is financial. But I think what they're realizing right now is that, wait a minute, our friend Dennis Rodman has gotten us into a situation that we had no idea was this highly politicized and could really blow back on us in ways in which we couldn't have imagined. But they should have known this.
Yeah, how can they not know this?
Exactly. I mean, when you're involved in a situation like this with what is considered to be a sworn enemy of the United States, and you're over there doing some sort of charity work, a publicity stunt or whatever with Dennis Rodman,
who's one of the biggest loose cannons in sports history.
In sports history, entertainment history, you name it. you should have saw this coming. So I you know, there's the players themselves are involved are trying to pull back a little bit, but I think that's
too little,
already
too late
too
for
little,
them.
Too late, exactly.
And if they didn't know, their agents should have before letting them go.
Exactly. I mean, they also played perfectly into the CNN, you know, marketing plan right now, because Anderson Cooper is in a very tight competition to try to regain audience at night. They've actually split his show up into two different hours. And this was just tailor-made for his whole shtick about holding people accountable. So here he's got Rodman. He just went on and on and on as the sort of offended everyman for the rest of the American people and the family. How could Rodman do that? He went on for two solid hours last night about this thing. So, I mean, Rodman, whether he knew it or not, stepped right into a hornet's nest that he should have seen coming too.
Now, I agree, but I also think that the government, the United States government, has really taken this situation and sort of used it to its advantage by basically saying, you know, look, we didn't sanction this. Mm-hmm. We're not going to sanction it. We feel the way we've always felt about North Korea. If Mr. Rodman wants to go as a private citizen, that's fine. We have no problem with that. If those players want to be involved in that, that's fine. But we're not going to engage in this back and forth with North Korea using Dennis Rodman and these players as pawns. We're out of it. So I think that they handled it very well.
I just wonder if, despite all of the criticism of Dennis Rodman, if maybe this whole scenario might not lead to Kenneth Bay being released sooner rather than later.
It could. And it would have – the government would have very little to do with it. Dennis Rodman might even get some publicity out of it. But I still think it's going to be negative publicity on the part of all those other players. Right. I think that they got pulled into it not knowing exactly what was going on.
So the discussion of drone journalism, it's nothing new on this program here on Views of the News. We've talked about it and the experimentation that's been done here in the past, and also how those projects have been grounded by the FAA. But it looks like the new year could bring about some changes. Last week, the Federal Aviation Administration named six teams across the country that are going to host the development and testing of drones. The goal is to see how well the unmanned aircraft can share the skies with commercial airliners. It'll be happening in Alaska, Nevada, near Utica in New York, North Dakota, Corpus Christi, Texas, and at Virginia Polytechnic University. What can we take away from these six choices?
I don't know what we can take away from them. I wish that there were, you know, a couple of the places, including here mm-hmm. and in Nebraska, where we've been studying how drones might actually improve journalism, were included in some of the places that were selected. But they're obviously mostly rural spaces or less highly populated areas. And the FAA does have some interests it's trying to protect. I mean, safety is one of them. But there also are a lot of political concerns about drones. I mean, just the word drones conjures up in people's minds something other than what most commercial ventures or media are talking about doing with them.
Mike, do you know if the University of Missouri was one of or any of the 25 applications that were submitted for this program?
I don't know if we didn't submit one. Okay. I don't know if Matt Wade at Nebraska did, but you know, both they and we received cease and desist letters
right.
from the FAA, which basically shut down the experiments we were doing.
And so, we're going to touch on more on that in a minute. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, what I was going to say was that I think, Mike, you're talking about the connotation of the word drone and what that means, because most of the time when people hear about drones, it's in a military aspect. What I'm really concerned about is the FAA and its sort of reluctance to allow drones to be used if it's going to have some sort of commercial application. I think this is where you have this sort of conflict between business and government. And that's where I think the FAA is really going to have to be careful about how they develop these regulations, because it could benefit some businesses at the expense of others.
And there's going to be an awful lot of testimony pro and con about drones and whether they'll be used to spy on people. There are interests, agricultural interests, for example, that do not want drones from anybody flying over their farms, their facilities. So there's an awful lot of issues besides safety that are going to be addressed.
And I also think that, you know, they also need to really think about the educational aspects of this, because most of the at least what I've seen is as as being done in drones here in the United States is being done by universities and various programs that will help people better understand agriculture, better understand environment, weather, those types of things.
Well, while this was all happening, as these six sites were being named, a video showed up on the website of the Spokane Spokesman Review that showed an aerial shot of a polar plunge, which said it was courtesy of, quote, a radio-controlled helicopter and tiny camera. The photographer who took the video, Jesse Tinsley, said in a tweet that he figured it was legal because he did it with his own camera on a day off, but acknowledged on Twitter that maybe this is a gray area. Mike, you're laughing.
Well, I mean, it is a gray area. I mean, I don't know that what he did was illegal, but clearly the FAA would discourage them from doing that by saying he was doing it on his time off, or for that matter, by getting non-media employees to gather this video with drones and then submit it to news organizations as a way of kind of skirting around the FAA's ban on this kind of thing. So are they going to get in trouble? Probably not. Were they bending the rules as far as they could to get that content out there? Yeah.
Oh, I think they were definitely bending the rules. And I think that what you're seeing in terms of the conversation that's going on here is other news organizations saying, wait a minute, we've pulled back on our use of drones. And here's another organization that is sort of skirting the rules by saying, well, he was on his day off. He submitted it as a courtesy.
It was not his own rig, not something that we had issued to him.
Something we had issued to him or something that we had sanctioned. So, I mean, I think that this goes back to what I was talking about earlier, the whole government business commercial aspect of drones and who's going to benefit and who's not going to benefit. This is where those regulations are really going to come in as being important.
I suspect that if, in fact, they do get away with it in Spokane, that you're going to see other news organizations test the waters too. There's all kinds of, well, let's see. I gave one of my employees a bonus for good work and, you know, a few weeks later, they bought a drone. I wonder, but they bought it with their own money. Or we've got citizens out there submitting content. And well, we didn't ask them to do it, but
this is where the whole citizen journalism thing really comes in. Because if you've got someone, and you've got a lot of people out there who have these drones, and if they decide, hey, I want to go put a camera on it and fly over a marathon or fly over any kind of event and send it in, then our news organization is going to say, no, I'm not going to put it on because you guys didn't get FAA approval? I don't think so. They're going to hide behind the shield of, this is something that we didn't generate. You know, the citizens of our community sent this in and we felt obligated because we wanted to share it with everyone else in the community.
It's like somebody stealing documents and leaking them to the media. Well, we didn't steal them, but we're going to publish them. And that's exactly what's going to happen in this situation.
Right. Well, we're going to have to watch and see what happens and see who the next person is to push the envelope on that a little bit. One of the main tenets of journalism is the idea of speaking truth to power, of holding our elected officials accountable for what they say, what they do, how they vote, and so on. But what exactly does that responsibility mean? Journalist Itay Hoede unleashed a wave of controversy Friday when he appeared to out Illinois Congressman Aaron Schock as gay on Facebook. In the post, which has since gone viral on social media and has been covered by Queerty, Gawker, and the Miami Herald, among others, Hoede, who is also gay, wrote in the hypothetical, wanting to know or asking if there were to be a certain GOP congressman, say, from Illinois, who has been reported to shower with a male roommate, been caught by TMZ cameras trolling gay bars, and voted against the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, opposed the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, is against gay marriage, and is for the federal marriage amendment, which would add language to the U.S. Constitution banning gay marriage. Hoede then linked to a piece from AmericaBlog.org entitled The Seven Gayest Aaron Schock Instagram Posts of 2013. Now, one of the points in Hoede's Facebook rant is because of the cultural mores against outing people, it's impossible to hold elected officials responsible for what he calls hypocrisy. Maybe, maybe not. But I want to talk about how he went about doing this. How he made this information, as he believes it to be, public.
Well, by doing it on Facebook and sort of framing it the way he did before actually mentioning this person's name. I think that that to me is sort of a cheap shot. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do this, then go right out and do it. Don't hide behind all these innuendos and
hypotheticals
and that sort of thing. That being said, I don't think it's the responsibility of journalists to quote unquote out someone. That's something that's personal to them. And that's something that they need to make as a personal decision with their family and that sort of thing. Now, in the case of this congressman, if his record is this, but his actions are this, you can tell that story. You can tell that story without making accusations about this person being gay or not being gay. And I have no problems with journalists telling that story.
I'm actually a little divided on this, and I have been for a while, because I do believe when there's the level of public policy hypocrisy that is alleged in this outing of the Illinois congressman, I mean, I do think that the public has a right to know that someone who is gay is very, very actively voting against or opposing anything that would help with marriage equality or gay rights. I think there's something to be said there. I have a little bit of problem with the journalists deciding to be the outers, so to speak. I mean, we had Larry Craig, the senator from Idaho, was outed, and it was sort of very similar background. But that didn't happen because the media people covering him decided to out him. Somebody else did. And the media, again, kind of like the drones when the content comes in from citizens or the leaked documents. Once it gets to us, no problem with doing a story.
Well, and in that case, there was a story. This is a journalist going onto Facebook and simply putting an opinion in a bunch of
There wasn't a story here.
Right. That's the problem. That's the part that I mean, this seems to be some sort of personal vendetta against this congressman, because other journalists haven't gone to the extent of making this linkage and putting it out there for the public to decide if he is or if he isn't. And that's the problem that I have.
And from what we've been able to read, yeah, and I don't know any more than what I've read so far, it may not have been just a personal vendetta against that congressman. There's some indication that the journalist also had a problem with his superiors in traditional news organizations for being unwilling to do this. And so he chose a way that he could completely control to get it out there. And I don't agree with the way he did it, but I think his motivations also were aimed at the media.
No, I agree with you on that, Mike. I think his motivations were aimed at the media. But I go back to your original question, yeah, Amy, which is it our responsibility to do that? And like I said, I have no problem with here's some of the things that he's done in his personal life. This congressman has done in his personal life, if we can verify that. And they are totally opposite of the way in which he votes.
But what happens in the instance where, because it is a very conservative district in downstate Illinois, so perhaps his votes are in line with his constituency that sent him to Washington in the first place, and do his votes have to be in line with his his?
Well, you would think that they would be, because yeah, because a lot of what a person decides on when they walk into a voting booth about who they're going to choose as their representative is based on that person and their personal beliefs and their person and their lifestyle. So I think it is important for the citizens in that particular community to know.
That's all I care
too. Perhaps his votes in Congress were in line with his constituency.
Right.
It doesn't even matter if he can live one way and vote another way. Mm-hmm. But does the public have a right to know that he's doing that? Maybe so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're less than a month away from the opening of the Winter Olympic Games in Sochi, Russia. And at NBC, they've been preparing for months, introducing us to the athletes, getting us excited about sports we don't normally see on TV here, cue curling, and building storylines to draw in viewers. But yesterday, Matt Lauer talked to reporters about the other story, the one they don't know much about yet, namely the uncertainty of the security situation there. Bob Costas also said the NBC team has its fingers crossed, but that it's poised to react should there be any kind of a terrorist event, a reaction to the controversy of the anti-gay laws in Russia, and so on. The Olympics haven't been a specific terror target since 1996, but what is it about Sochi that has this concern brought back up?
Well, I think one of the big concerns is the fact that you just, what, a couple of weeks ago, yeah, had a bombing in Russia, which was only 600 miles away, by one of the largest terrorist groups in that particular region, basically sort of as a precursor to what this group claims it's going to do in attacking what's going on at the Olympics. So I think that security is going to be a huge issue here, and Russia is concerned about it. Vladimir Putin is concerned about it. So I think that NBC and all the other outlets that are going to be there covering it definitely need to be concerned about.
I mean, it's a legitimate story because of all the problems in the Caucasus region of southern Russia, and as you just described, Ernest. But I actually think the security problem is not probably for the athletes at the Olympic venues themselves, because they are going to be locked down tight. But as some of the athletes themselves have said, they're worried more about their families and friends,
right, and the general public.
And the general public who will be in less secure areas near the Olympics. So it's a very legitimate story.
And I think that, you know, if you look at the media coverage of it, in particular what NBC is saying about it, they are geared up for the possibility of this happening.
And they're preparing for this to become a hard news event. This isn't just sports. Right. This isn't just entertainment. Sending Peter Engel, Jim Maceda, names that we hear covering stories in Syria, in Libya, the hard hitters.
And I think other news organizations as well, from CNN and ABC and CBS, they're all sending their news people there for the possibility that this could turn out to be a story. Hopefully not, but, you know, there's that possibility.
It's only been a little bit more than a year ago that we had terrorists, young American men, tied to the Caucasus region who did the Boston bombing. So, you know, it's a very legitimate story, and frankly, it's one that we ought to pay a lot more attention to than whether Lindsey Vonn and Tiger Woods are going to be celebrities at the
which they're not, because, you know,
she's now out. Not going to be.
So, yes. Right. Yeah.
Okay, well, very quickly before we go, we've got about a minute or so. I want to dip into the world of entertainment a bit, talk about a cast change at Saturday Night Live. Producers have announced they've hired 27-year-old Sasheer Zamata after auditioning about 25 black women in New York and Los Angeles. She is a New York-based improviser, stand-up comic, and sketch writer, and will be the first black female cast member since Maya Rudolph left in 2007. The show has been under fire for not being diverse enough. Is one hire going to change that kind of recent legacy?
No. They're going to have to do a lot more in a country as diverse as ours, and in a city as diverse as New York. Saturday Night Live is going to have to do a much better job of diversifying its cast, and one person is not going to be enough.
Well, CNN's Don Lemon was on Tom Joyner yesterday saying he finds it hard to believe in 2014 we're still even talking about the importance of diversity in television.
Well, I mean, we talk about it in sports, so we might as well talk about it in entertainment and all the other aspects of our media environment.
Okay, well, like always, we're out of time before we're out of things to talk about. Thanks to you for listening this week. We'll be back next week with video as well. If you want to read more about any of the topics we've talked about today, check out our links blog under the Talks Show tab at kbia.org. You can also replay the show and leave comments for us there, or send them to us via email at views@kbia.org. Our thanks to KBIA's Pat Akers for handling the audio today. I'm Amy Simons. Be sure to listen in next week. Mike, Ernest, and I will be back with you for another edition of Views of the News.